Hello and welcome back to another edition of the Warriors All 82 podcast crossover with the Forum Club. Lakers Warriors, second game of the season, second game in Staples, second time the Lakers have gone up big, but only the first time they've won. And I think we knew, although Jovan Buha, who is with me on the Forum Club side of this, although we knew that the Warriors had come back in that same building this season from 19 down, you knew it wasn't happening tonight. You knew, I mean, I felt like end of the first quarter, I knew it was over.
Yeah, this was a, it just felt different. And I know you've been, you know, following the Lakers this season, obviously, as you're on our weekly podcast. And it just, there was a different verve to the team. You know, it just was a different zip. Like they had a kind of control over the game early on that we just have not seen from them in the first quarter. Like if you look at recently, especially in this 80-less stretch, they've really struggled in the first quarters and have had to kind of dig themselves out of deficits and or just kind of these funky starts. And they just jumped on the Warriors from the start. And it was, this one was over, I mean, like you said, by the end of the first, but definitely by halftime.
Yeah, and it was, from the Warriors side, it was the opposite of that. This was as lifeless as they've been in a while. I mean, they came in, you know, the Lakers have been in a rut lately. What's their whole, you know, what is it? They've lost like 5-7, something like that. The Warriors, they had won 3 in a row. And really, if you go back to their road trip when they lost, it was these late game collapses that they outplayed the Magic and Hornets. Should have won that game. And if they had close out those two wins, they would have been on 7-game winning streak. This is the best they've been in what had been a choppy season, and it was kind of leading up to, hey, they're about to go play Lakers, Blazers, Suns. Can they make a statement going in to the All-Star break? Or like, hey, they're more dangerous than we thought they were. And then they go down to LA, and even without Davis, they're just kind of outclassed from the start. You know, there are reasons for it. They turned it over 20 times. They fouled a bunch, which is something they'd cleaned up. They've been a really good defensive team all season, fourth in the league right now. But early in the season, they were fouling a bunch. They hadn't lately. That was a problem, I thought, in the first quarter. They just hacked. The Lakers are so much more physical than them. They kind of physically took over the game. And once they did that, the Lakers have a set defense, and they just stopped the Warriors pretty easily.
Yeah, I mean, from the Lakers' side, I look at the 38 free throw attempts. I believe that's a season high for them. And it was, I think, 32 going into the fourth quarter. So had this been a more competitive game, you know, you could have easily seen that in the 40s, which is rare. 60 rebounds, including 14 offensive. Obviously, the Warriors didn't shoot well, only 40%. But, you know, that was a pretty big gap there. And then the three-point shooting, which cooled off in the second half. But you know, I tweeted in the first quarter, like, when the Lakers are making their threes, they're basically unbeatable because they pretty much win in spite of their three-point shooting, you know, not because of it. But when they're actually hitting threes and taking them, you know, like, they're pretty low volume. They still only took 31 tonight, which was fewer than the Warriors. But they hit 6 in the first quarter. I think they had 9 at halftime. And you know, when they're shooting like that, like, it just, they're so hard to defend because now you have to defend them at the three-point line, but then that gives something up for LeBron on drives or Dennis Schroeder on drives. And I just thought this was one of their most complete performances of the season for sure. And the fact that this happened without Anthony Davis, and now they've had a couple of these performances back-to-back, it's pretty encouraging for them heading into the All-Star break.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
What I wrote about for the website was basically, you know, the Warriors have created this identity of top five defensive team that's going to score enough using either a Steph Curry, you know, big game from three, or just Steph Curry's gravity creating, you know, just assist after assist for Draymond Green at the basket. Slip cuts, back cuts, just different stuff that, that Curry has created. And they've generated a pretty good offensive rhythm. Now, they're still an average offensive team in the league. But when, you know, if you're 15th ranked offense, 4th ranked defense, you're going to beat a lot of teams. And I think that lulled, you know, maybe them into, I don't even want to say a false sense of security, but I just, I've seen them beat a lot of these bad teams, Hornets, Cavaliers, a lot of, you know, the Warriors lead the league in assists, and they do it with all this stuff that beats young defenders. LaMelo Ball, oh, he just gave up 3 straight back cuts to Kelly Oubre. Oh, he lost track of Steph Curry off the ball. Colin Sexton, same thing. Like, they have really generated a good style against bad teams. You're reminded tonight what the playoffs will look like, what playing elite defenses look like. When you play veterans like LeBron James, I put it in film in the postgame story, just twice, he reads what Draymond's trying to do, because and he's been watching film lately. He's played Steph and Draymond so many times, and he just turns what has been, boom, Kelly Oubre dunk into a pick six the other way a couple times. And it's just, you're reminded that what they're doing is probably going to really struggle to work offensively in the playoffs against the best teams. You know, there's a reason why they're a 6 seed and probably not much of a playoff threat against a team like the Lakers.
Yeah, it was a really weird game. You know, Steph started off really slow, and I thought that was kind of like the death knell for the Warriors, where I feel like I didn't notice Steph out there until like the second quarter. And, you know, just the offense overall. I mean, Eric Paschal at 18 points, and I thought had some nice moments. Like, that was kind of it for the bench, where everyone else was just kind of meh. You know, I think this is a good time to talk about Damian Jones, because he had a nice stretch.
Anytime
there.
Anytime is a good time to talk about Damian Jones.
What did you think of his 8-minute stretch before he got injured?
Well, I mean, you mentioned him getting injured. That was one of his main issues with the Warriors. Tore his pec twice, and never really was healthy enough. I mean, you know, he against a Warriors team at that point playing pretty half speed. He got free for a lob dunk. I think he had maybe a little floater that rolled in. He had a spike block. But I've seen that before. I've seen an emphatic Damian Jones block. I've seen some alley-oop dunks. The problem is his feel for the game, and really not much else skill outside of the restricted area. I know that's what the Lakers are looking for, but I've seen it tried on a winning team before, and it's never worked with Damian Jones.
So you think this is maybe he gets another 10-day at most, and that's kind of it?
Perhaps. And like, look, if maybe, you know, he's now been away from the Warriors for, you know, a season and a half, clearly didn't win many favors. And, you know, he didn't impress Atlanta enough to keep him, and he didn't impress Phoenix enough to keep him around. So, I mean, like, once you have a proven track record in the league that, you know, you're with the team long enough and they go, you know, it's not there. Maybe because of his simplified role with the Lakers, but that was his simplified role with the Warriors too, and they gave up on him. Mm-hmm. They traded a pick to get off him and get Amari Spellman. So I think over the long run, no. I mean, he's an athlete. Like, he's a high level NBA athlete at the center position. He's just never shown enough to believe he's a winning component on a team. You know, if he can't crack the rotation in Atlanta, can't crack it in Phoenix, I fail to, for a team like the Lakers that's so veteran savvy, that's thinking about the playoffs, I know they need burst athleticism, but I just can't see LeBron James being okay with Damian Jones on the floor in a playoff game with what I've seen in his career.
Yeah, and we've talked about it on the podcast before, where you know, when you're looking at that center spot for the Lakers and you're thinking about what they need or what might fit, you know, my line of thinking has just been, that guy has to be better than Marc Gasol or Montrezl Harrell. Like, I know both of those guys are flawed, you know, particularly with some of the rim protection stuff. And, you know, they're not JaVale McGee or Dwight Howard. They're not vertical spacers or, you know, vertical defenders. But, you know, if you're going to enter the Lakers rotation, which is already 11 deep and kind of in a, you know, bit of a minutes crunch, like, you got to be better than one of those two guys. And I just don't see that with Damian Jones. You know, I know Laker fans are already really hyped on him and are probably going to be upset with me saying this. But, you know, I think he can't, like, sure, I think if Trez or Mark went down and they needed, you know, 8 to 12 minutes from him, he'd be fine under, you know, normal circumstances. But that's not the case yet. You know, I know AD's out, but I think that's more of a problem at the four than the five. So I just think with the Lakers in the center spot, if they're going to add someone and that person's going to actually play, it has to be someone who's better than Mark or Trez. And I think the list of available guys that are going to be better than Mark or Trez is very, very small, if any, you know, depending on who hits the buyout market. So I'm a little skeptical on them finding a clear upgrade, but I could be wrong. And who knows, maybe Damian sticks.
Yeah, I just, again, like, I could see him being around and injected in different regular season games to just give them a little bit of an athletic boost back there. But in a playoff setting, like, he's not the kind of guy who, even as a role player, can really chip in a series. He never has. So that, to me, is like, I just usually just follow the track record on that. You mentioned Steph earlier, and maybe not, you know, given that full impact in the first quarter. It is interesting. Like, the Warriors really started to gain a rhythm this year, this season, maybe 20, 22 games ago or so, when Steph had this just crazy, you know, let's say 12-game stretch, something like that, where he shot, like, above 50% from three. It's when he had, you know, the 62-pointer. He just was putting together all these, like, 9 of, you know, 13 from 3, 11 of 17 from 3, those type of nights. Over the last 8 games, he's 31-87, 35% from 3. That's not bad. You know, there's so many NBA players that would take that over a 20-game stretch, let alone an 8-game stretch. But for him, I mean, he's quieted down from that scorching streak that got him in the MVP conversation. And when I mentioned the stuff like I did tonight, where some of that off-ball gravity stuff's not working and smart defenses are cutting down on those slip cuts and they're taking away Draymond a little bit in some of those passing lanes, Steph Curry, to beat a team like the Lakers, to compete, you know, even as you look forward to Portland, Phoenix this week, and he's going to need to have big nights again. You know, it's you could say it's unfair, but that's the burden of the one scoring superstar. And it's been quieted a little lately. He's not playing poorly. He's just not playing otherworldly right now.
Yeah. And I thought, you know, he had 7 assists in only 26 minutes. So he was moving the ball and finding the role guy. And, you know, I thought, you know, he had clearly had some Steph moments, but it just felt like, you know, with the way that guys have been able to attack the Lakers defense recently and not having Anthony Davis, that was kind of my concern heading into this game, is like, Steph might just go off, and if he can get 30 plus, like, this is going to be a game going into the fourth. And that obviously wasn't the case. So I think part of that is, you know, Dennis being back, and I know he wasn't defending Steph that much, but, you know, his defensive impact on the Lakers, and the ability to play the passing lanes and just get them out in transition. They've been just a much better team on both sides of the ball with him in the lineup. But yeah, I mean, I thought this was just a bloodbath, right? Like, it you know, and even when the reserves were in there, you know, looking at, like, the Lakers bench, every bench guy was you know, plus double digits in you know, plus minus. So it really was like, from start to finish, just, you know, the Lakers controlling this game, I think, in pretty much all you know, facets, and that included, you know, defending Steph.
Yeah, the Warriors have been really winning the Curry Draymond minutes. They pair those two together because Draymond, at this point, he almost needs to be next to Steph, because they do obviously some of the pick and roll stuff, and Draymond sees all the gravity cuts and everything. So they're unlike most, you know, 1-2 tandems that sometimes are staggered in a substitution pattern. They aren't. They play the full first together. They play the full third together. They come back at the 6-minute mark of the second and fourth. And the Warriors have been killing in those minutes and then really kind of bleeding at the top of the second and fourth quarters as they really try to find a unit to survive. And so the fact that they were down 20 when they went to their, you know, non-Curry Draymond units, that's part of, like, you knew it's over because you're like, at that part of the game, the Warriors try to get up by like 8 and then hope that when Steph and Draymond come back in, they still have the lead. So, you know, you mentioned the Lakers bench being a plus. That from the Warriors side of things is like, it's where they're searching right now. You know, they've gotten their centers back. They're trying to find, you know, a sweet spot with James Wiseman as they're developing this clear, you know, huge talent who's in, once again, as I keep saying, kind of like the Bambi stages of his career. And, you know, he didn't have a good game tonight. This is it's been very kind of hit and miss his first four games back. He's played two bad games against LA. He doesn't fit well against contenders right now, particularly smart, you know, centers like Marc Gasol. What'd you see?
Wiseman, I thought had some good moments against Trez, and you know, I think that we actually saw in the Brooklyn game against the Lakers, Steve Nash match DeAndre Jordan's minutes to Montrezl Harrell's and was really able to stymie Montrezl Harrell. So I thought the fouls, obviously, you know, I mean, 6 fouls in 25 minutes, not good.
Like, well, it's better than his 6 fouls in 18 minutes yeah. he had in Indianapolis a couple games ago. Yeah, he's a foul machine.
Yeah.
And not only is he a foul machine because he is jumpy and huge and he's getting the rookie whistle, he then a lot of the times when he does, even on possessions he's not fouling, you could tell all he's thinking about is, I can't foul, I'm coming over, I don't want to foul. And sometimes, you know, a guy like Dennis Schroeder might slip in a layup because he's like, all he's thinking about is making sure he doesn't foul. I mean, he's in his head defensively right now. That's clear.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, though, like you see the physical tools, right? Like you, and that's kind of been the Wiseman experience. And, you know, I had him on my fantasy team. I play fantasy basketball. And so I have been keeping track on him. And you see like some of these highlights or just some of these clips where only a handful of centers can do those things, but then you do see the defensive mistakes. You see some of the shot selection, and I think it's just clear that you know, physically he has all the gifts. It's just, you know, him putting that together, and how long is that process going to be? And you know, for a Warriors team that is looking to, I think, you know, obviously make the playoffs this year and hopefully have a competitive showing in the playoffs, and then next year potentially. With Clay back, you know, enter that contention group and kind of that inner circle, just sort of how his development, it, you know, is on that timeline. Because, you know, under normal circumstances, I think he'd be given more of a leash, more of a ability to grow. And not that the Warriors aren't doing that, but it is just kind of that push and pull of, you know, we want to give him opportunity, but we also have to win. And you know, be it going Draymond at the five or Looney or, you know, Pascal, like whoever, I think, you know, that's just kind of one of the most interesting dynamics from afar, you know, with the Warriors, just kind of how they handle his development and how he gets better, you know, with some of the players he's playing with.
Yeah, no question. And they've thought this move to the second unit would give him some more exploratory time. I mean, I've talked about the need for him to at times be away from Steph and Draymond, but the mix there hasn't worked. I'm not sure it will with him and Pascal and with Wanamaker at point guard, who's not a playmaker or a pick and roll guy. But moving beyond that, zooming out, pretty, you know, relatively uninteresting game just because the Lakers dominated it. Let's talk West right now as we head towards the All-Star break. From the Lakers side of things, who do they end? Who are their last two?
Phoenix and Sacramento. They got a back-to-back. Okay.
Sacramento, who had one of the worst losses of the season. They blew an 8-point lead in the last 51 seconds.
It's insane.
It's very hard to do. To LaMelo Ball in the Charlotte Hornets. But, and then for the Warriors go at Portland Wednesday, at Phoenix Thursday. And for the Warriors, those are two big games because they're jostling for middle of the bracket seeding. You know, they're right in that like 5, 6, 7, 8 range right now. And those are teams they might need head to head wins against, you know, as you look far beyond, as you look towards May. But tier wise in the West, what have you, I mean, where are you at right now? I mean, Utah has cooled a tiny bit, but they've still been the best team in the conference. Clippers had a loss in Milwaukee tonight. I know Lakers have struggled lately. So let's start up top, and then we can move to kind of that next tier.
My tier one is the Lakers and the Clippers.
Not a Jazz believer, remaining a Jazz hater.
So, well, I'd almost have it like tier 1A Lakers, 1B Clippers. And then I have the Jazz on tier 2 by themselves. I think there is a slight gap between them and the two LA teams, but also a bigger gap between them and the rest of the West. I just think when, you know, you look at it, like they have to go through at least one of the LA teams in theory, right? Like they're not, you know, going to the finals without beating at least one of those teams, if not both of them. And, you know, call me simple, but when I look at the playoff matchup, I think with the Lakers, they have the two best players in the series. When I look at the Clippers, they arguably have the two best players in the series. I think, depending on how you view Paul George, he is arguably better than Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell. You know, I'd probably argue that. So it just comes down to that. And I know they're deep. I know they're well coached. I know they've been together. They have really good continuity, but they have a really good home court. And who knows, they might be one of the only arenas with fans at that point. So, maybe I'm underselling them, but I just do think that when it comes down to it, the two LA teams have a better star tandem. That's the difference maker for me.
I think what's clear, we'll see if Utah can prove it. You know, it feels a little bit like Milwaukee the last two regular seasons, where there was points during the last few regular seasons where it's like, if you just look at net rating and all the indicators, we have to consider them a title contender. Then Milwaukee gets to the playoffs and they don't do it. I'm with you. I'm kind of a Jazz doubter. And then when they prove it, I'll admit, look, they proved it and we should have seen it coming in the regular season. But yeah, I wouldn't pick them over either LA teams in a series. Now, what's clear is those three are above the fray. Who's 40 right now? Is it Phoenix? I mean, standings wise, it's Phoenix, but Denver's looming deep down now. I think they're around 8. Are you at Phoenix as that next team?
I think for me, it's probably tier 3 would be Phoenix, Portland, and Denver. I guess you could make the argument of Golden State in there. Like Golden State at their best, I think, is tier 3, and then at their worst, they're probably, you know, tier 4 or 5. So it really just kind of depends on how you view it. But I'd probably put Phoenix, Portland, and Denver in the same tier, although I am most bullish on Phoenix out of those three.
Yeah, Phoenix, I'd say, at least in the first half of the season, with the Paul clearly still is not, you know, he's declined from his prime, but man, it's really a slow decline. He's proven that over the last couple of years, and Booker's on the rise. So I do think they've kind of cemented themselves for now at 4. The Denver stuff's weird. They've just not had a good first half. I would say coming into the season, I would have said they're the third best team in the West. I don't really know where to peg them right now. I'm higher on the Warriors than Portland. Portland is going to get some bodies back over the second half, and maybe that changes the mix, but I don't know. I've seen Portland flame out in the playoffs enough.
Yeah.
What the Warriors have done over the first half is they built this defense that is playoff worthy. You know, this fourth-ranked defense is, not the right night to say it, because I just saw what happens when you defend their action well, and a team like the Lakers blowing them out. But yeah, I'm very curious to see these final. It's not even just the final two games before the break. The Warriors go Portland, Phoenix, both on the road, and then after the break they go Clippers, Jazz, Lakers. So their next five are really, you know, throwing Denver out of the mix. Really, the top five rivals in the conference. So and when you start that run with the Lakers tonight, it was the six game stretch that was like, okay, Warriors, you're playing well. You've built this top five defense. You have a rhythm. You know, Curry's kind of on the fringes of the MVP mix. Go prove what you actually are. Make a statement over this six game stretch. Didn't start well over on the first of six, but I think we're in on general in the same range on how the Western Conference looks going into the break.
My thing with Phoenix that I'm really interested in is it's a unique situation that we haven't really seen before, where aside from Chris Paul and Jay Crowder, basically nobody in this rotation has been on a playoff team before. I mean, I guess if you're really going deeper, like, you know, Frank Kaminsky even been in the play? Like, but I'm just mainly looking at like Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton, Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson. These guys haven't played in the playoffs before, and it's usually like the upstart young team is the 7 seed, the 8 seed, right? Going back to the Warriors, like they were a 6 seed against the Spurs that one year, I believe, and you know they ended up pushing them a little bit, but I just think that it's interesting to see a team like potentially have home court advantage with no prior playoff experience. And again, just looking at some of the young teams that have come up, be it the Thunder, the Warriors, and different other teams that we've seen be really good with a really young core. They usually have like the 1 year where they're the 6, 7, 8 seed. They lose in the first round in a competitive showing. And then that next year they take that jump. The Suns have kind of already taken that jump where, you know, they're the 4 seed. They have some gap between them and San Antonio at 5. And, you know, who knows, depending on how things play out with the LA teams, with Utah, like maybe they jump up even to 3. And just them being in that position, despite having several key guys who've never made the playoffs before, it's going to be interesting to see how, you know, Booker, Ayton, Bridges, those guys kind of handle that, because we do know there is a difference in the playoffs with just the intensity, the defense, the shot quality. Everything goes to a different level. And the fact that those guys haven't, you know, experienced that, you don't want to oversell it, but you also don't want to undersell it, where I just don't really know how to properly rate and view Phoenix in a playoff setting.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I view them similarly to how I viewed Chris Paul and the Young Thunder last year. Although the Young Thunder teams didn't quite have a Booker. I mean, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I feel like, you know, he's taking a bigger leap this season away from Paul. But what's different is, to me, the West is, you know, that part of the West is not as powerful as it was even last season. You know, the Thunder lost a 7-game series against the Rockets last year. Rockets don't exist. James Harden's in the East. I personally, probably because I cover the Warriors, and I think this would be a fun series, I kind of like to see Suns Warriors 4 or 5. I'm not sure. And, you know, maybe we say Suns any team. Suns Portland would be fun too. But, you know, I think, you know, when we talk about a veteran, you know, known commodity with this Curry, Draymond tandem against, you know, a rising Suns team, I think that'd be a fun 4 or 5. And then winner, I was going to say winner gets smacked by the Lakers, but winner might get Utah, honestly. So, that would be interesting. But yeah, that's kind of what I'm looking at.
What do you think would be the most interesting Lakers matchup in the first round?
Denver, right? You go West Finals round one, and like Denver's a looming down there. Like, I'm not ready to predict they're going to leap up the standings and escape that situation. So, I mean, Denver would be intriguing. And then you could even go down and start looking at the 9, 10, 11 range, because this play-in situation, so where you could get in at 10 basically if you just play well. I mean, like the Pelicans are a team down there that if, you know, Zion seems to be figuring it out, and if he just has like a great close, they have talent, that would be fun. I mean, are there any of those other, you know, deeper Western Conference teams that haven't had good first halves that you're looking at, like maybe they have a good second half and slip in and they're at least dangerous in round one?
I'm waiting on Dallas. I know they've had
a bunch of
COVID stuff, but after I covered that series last year against the Clippers, and I walked away from that thinking, you know, this team could maybe be the third best team in the West next year, and that has clearly not played out. But I think Luka LeBron, I mean, they had a couple classic matchups last year, That one game that Danny Green hit that crazy three to send it into overtime, and you know, Luka and LeBron both had like 30 something point triple doubles. Those are usually good matchups. So I think, I mean, at this point, anything, the one that would kind of be boring would be San Antonio. Just, you know, I don't really want to see that matchup, but be it Portland, Denver, Golden State, Dallas, New Orleans, any of those five, I think would be really interesting.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Jovan, appreciate you coming on Combo Podcast, Forum Club, Warriors All 82. Two off days for the Warriors before this Portland Phoenix back-to-back. Lakers got a couple more interesting games. I got to ask you, because I think Warriors play the Lakers third game out of the break. Any chance Davis is back by then, do you think?
Yeah. I think that might be like the early end. I don't foresee him coming back directly like out of the All-Star break. I'd be surprised by that. But I think that Golden State game could be, you know, maybe the first game he's back.
Good news for Warriors. all right. I will talk to you. Actually, we're going to do a Warriors plus minus on the feed early this week with Tim, Marcus, and Ethan. So talk to you then. Jovan, send him out.
All right. I will be back on Tuesday to discuss the Lakers game with the Suns. Thank you guys for listening. Talk to you then.